from the heart of flyover country. He's not on the far right, and he's certainly not on the far left. Like you, he's somewhere in the middle. This is Dale Carter's America.
All right, well, we're back. Dale Carter with, of course, Kurt Wheeler. And it's been so long since we've gathered around the little podcast thing. We were late last week. We're on time this week. So it's kind of thrown together this time, but hopefully it's going to be okay.
I think it's going to be our best episode yet.
You think so?
And we forgot to mention, actually, last week or last episode was our 20th episode.
Yeah.
So
this would be the 21st.
Yes, this would be the 21st. Yep, we've passed a milestone, a major milestone.
Math's not my strong suit, as you'll find out in working with me. We're aiming for a number for syndication. I'm not sure what that number is, but we'll talk to the head honcho here in the building and find out about that. My 24-city thank you tour is underway. We had a great response in Excelsior Springs. We were at Wabash Barbecue. Had a huge crowd there. The weather was perfect for it. Handing out throwback throwdown tickets for Clint Black and Tracy Byrd. You don't have to be a country music fan to listen to the podcast, because very rarely do we talk about country music.
That's right. I don't think we really ever. I mean, we've talked about it adjacent, but we never really talked about the music before.
No, but we talk about the fact that I do the morning show at KFKF. So sometimes, invariably, country music is going to weave its way through. And because country music really is so patriotic, so American, mm-hmm. I mean, the two kind of fit together. So if you're listening to the podcast and you want to come by and say hi, stop number two is coming up on Thursday. And that'll be Belton. We'll be at a place called Tara's Malt Shop right on Main Street. We find some quirky little out-of-the-way places, mm-hmm. and that's where we do the thank you tour. We hand out tickets for Throwback Throwdown. It's just a great time. So if you're in the neighborhood, Thursday from 11 to noon, maybe an early lunch, stop by Tara's Malt Shop in Belton. Over the weekend, I kind of I love to binge watch things. I'm a big history buff. We've talked about that a little bit. The History Channel, they're really good at history when they do history. You get what I mean?
Yeah, when it's not, you know, ancient aliens and all that kind of stuff.
Ancient aliens, the curse of Oak Island. I don't know what in the hell that's about.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that one.
They've got different, you know, series that really have nothing. Ice Road Truckers. I mean, some people like stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, back before we had the History Channel on our local cable in Kansas City, I knew it was coming out. And I'm like, man, I love this because I love history. And I'm like calling my cable company every day, get the History Channel, get the History Channel. Mm-hmm. They finally get it. And it starts out great. And then they start doing all these divergences away from history, and I'm like, I just hate that.
Pawn Stars, isn't that on the History Channel?
Pawn Stars is kind of cool.
Is that on TLC?
No, that's on the History Channel. Oh, okay. That's kind of cool because, you know.
That guy's a real dick, though.
You think?
Yeah, I don't know.
They get a lot of stuff in, and he talks about the history of whatever it is.
Right.
So I think that's kind of cool. And I am sitting on a Buzz Aldrin autographed G.I. Joe action figure.
No way.
At some point.
Is it still in the box, though?
It's still in the box.
Okay, well, there you
go. He signed the box.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
So at some point, that's going to be worth a lot of money, and I'm going to be going out to Vegas to see what I can get for it.
Is it an astronaut G.I. Joe?
Yes.
Okay.
I have you don't know about my G.I. Joe action figure collection?
I sure don't.
We are way off the rails on this one. Come to my house sometime and you'll see it.
Okay.
And it's part of my childhood. We all have painful memories from childhood, right?
Yeah. Well, mine was Beanie Babies. I collected Beanie Babies for a while, but we got rid of those.
Well, you know, a stud would collect G.I. Joes. I'm not sure what kind of person would collect Beanie Babies or whatever. Okay. So, you know, when I was a kid, you had the full-size 12-inch G.I. Joe action figures, right? Mm-hmm. And I had them. My dad would get them for me for my birthday or whatever. Well, I moved out of my house during my senior year of high school. I was working in radio, made barely enough money to survive. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm going to emancipate myself. And I had two things I left behind at the house, my G.I. Joe action figure collection and my collection of football cards, with some pretty good ones in there too, by the way. And the weekend after I left, my mother had a garage sale and sold everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, see? So anyway, a little insight into my character. So in 1995, G.I. Joe went through a deal where they shrunk him from like 12 inches to like 3.5. No guy wants to be shrunk from 12 inches to 3.5, right?
That's right, yeah.
So I never collected the little G.I. Joes. But in 1995, they came out with like the replica G.I. Joes, and I bought all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I've got hundreds of them, right? And some people have taken pity on me over the years and given me or sold to me from their collection authentic G.I. Joes, so I have that going too. So if you're listening to the podcast and you have some G.I. Joes and you're over all the pain from your childhood, I'll probably buy them. So just contact me.
But the new one, they're recreations, right? So they're probably not as valuable as the
recreations
originals.
Aren't, but yeah. And maybe they will be because the first ones came out in 1995.
Mm-hmm.
Some pretty cool ones. I've got a Donald Trump action figure.
All right.
Bought that when he won the presidency because G.I. Joe did some cool things with presidents who served in the military. Like I've got a U.S. Grant, mm-hmm. Eisenhower, mm-hmm. Washington, mm-hmm. you know, all the great generals that mm-hmm. became presidents. And so when Trump came with his action figure in 2016, I bought it, mm-hmm. not knowing what I was getting. It comes with detachable hair, you know, thing. But it's only about 3 inches tall.
Right.
But I still put him on the presidential level because he's been a president.
I say
all of this to get to this.
Okay.
Over the weekend, I binge watched The Titans That Built America.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Are you into history at all?
Yeah, a little bit. Some eras more than others.
Yeah. Well, this is the era that included people like Walter Chrysler, William Boeing. I mean, names that mm-hmm. you're going to recognize. Henry and Edsel Ford, J.P. Morgan, Pierre DuPont, Henry Kaiser, and how, you know, they fought amongst themselves, and how when we got into World War II, they had to join forces.
Mm-hmm.
For the good of the country. And a lot of people think, in addition to our brave soldiers who went overseas to win that war, the fact that these titans of industry came together, ramped us up. In the beginning of World War II, we were the 17th largest military in the world.
Right.
Belgium had a bigger military than we did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they had to ramp up quickly, and they did it. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing how they came together to build America. So we generally start with the news, and if this were 77 years ago, the news of the day would be that yesterday, the 6th of June, the United States launched the largest amphibious invasion in military history. It's known as D-Day. I'm sure you know it. But if you go back to that time in World War II, the end was in doubt for a long time. The Germans were working on a nuclear weapon,
mm-hmm.
and the race to a nuclear weapon was on. And quite frankly, whoever got there first was going to win that war.
Mm-hmm.
And we got there first, thank God. Japan had a juggernaut of a military. So we were in a two-front war at a time when most of Americans felt, you know, very safe and secure with the Atlantic on one side, the Pacific on the other. But then all of a sudden, it's like Japan can reach our west coast. If Germany defeats Great Britain, they're going to have a launching point for our East Coast. We're going to be screwed. So we had to get into that war. We had to fight that war. And we had to stamp out Nazism. We had to stamp out Japan and their military. Ironically, we ended up rebuilding both of those countries. The fact that they've got great economies is because the United States rebuilt them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know much about the rebuilding phase, but certainly, like, if you look at Hiroshima and Nagasaki now, they're insane. I mean, they're super modern cities
right.
that they've, you know, built up very
well,
rapidly.
And that's the two cities that we dropped nuclear bombs on. But if you look at Germany, just in standard bombing, I mean, we took that country down mm-hmm. to the studs.
Yeah.
I mean, there was really nothing left of it. So that invasion started on June 6th, 1944. Think about these numbers, okay? Operation Overlord was the official name of the operation. Combined the forces of 156,000 U.S., British, and Canadian troops. There were nearly 7,000 ships and landing vessels, 2,300 aircraft, 867 gliders delivering airborne troops. More than 156 Allied ground troops stormed those beaches of Normandy. And what it took to do that, think about that for just a second.
I'm thinking about what it would be like to drop in on a glider into
some of them. You know, they dropped on trees.
Crazy, man.
And didn't make it, right?
It's crazy.
But think about that. You're on a landing craft. It's got a metal door in the front.
Mm-hmm.
That thing is going to drop down, and you're going to walk into machine gun fire
mm-hmm.
from installations up higher on the cliffs.
Right.
The Germans are just shooting at you.
Right.
I think about this, and I think about the last podcast we had. I'm still kind of pissed about this, if you think about it. Those millennials at Georgetown who said, you know, in a petition that we should not recognize Memorial Day because it basically a tribute to American imperialism. That still pisses me off like a week later after I saw that. And again, you've got a First Amendment right to say whatever stupid ass thing you want to say. Mm-hmm. But remember, as I put up on Facebook, that there were men who got out of those boats and were shot at immediately who paid that price.
Right.
That's what Memorial Day is all about. So 156,000 Allied infantrymen storming the five beaches, facing them 50,000 German troops who had the high ground. Stormy seas made the landings incredibly difficult. Many regiments coming ashore, far from their target destinations. At Omaha Beach, only two of the 29 amphibious tanks even made it to land on their own power. Three were later transported to the beach. At Utah Beach, the American troops included 14 Comanche code talkers who relayed critical tactical messages in their Native American tongue, which is kind of cool. The toughest fighting on D-Day was on Omaha Beach. Bombing runs had failed to take out heavily fortified Nazi artillery. First wave of American fighters cut down in droves by German machine gun fire as they scrambled across the mine-riddled beach. U.S. forces persisted through the day-long slog, pushing forward to a fortified seawall, then up steep bluffs to take out the Nazi artillery post by nightfall. All told, around 2,400 American troops were killed, wounded, or unaccounted for after the fighting on Omaha Beach alone.
Mm-hmm.
4,414 Allied soldiers were killed during the D-Day invasion in one battle.
And that's over the course of, what, 2-3 days, something like that, probably?
4,414. Yep. There's a National D-Day Memorial in Bedford, Virginia, with all of the names etched on it. Every Allied soldier, sailor, airman, Coast Guardsman who died on D-Day. And that had nothing to do with American imperialism. It had to do that we were attacked by Japan in 1941, and 2 days later, Germany declared war on us. No choice at all. And then again, through the Marshall Plan, which I was talking about earlier, we went in after World War II, and we rebuilt Japan and Germany.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, it really puts things in perspective, just thinking about, you know, the amount of courage that these men had, you know, compared to people who are screeching on college campuses. It's just, it's astounding how far you can fall in a generation, you know.
Well, this is your generation that's saying this, so yeah, well, you in part are responsible for it.
I disavow.
All right. So we're on the record there with that. Kurt has disavowed his generation running down our military, because that's just, I think about this. And, you know, my grandfather, I've talked about this before, he was in the 5th Engineers, which is a very famous military unit. They came in behind the D-Day invasion, and their job was to blow up anything that would be helpful to the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
And he never talked about it. Never talked about it.
I mean, I can imagine. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is, I mean, you're coming in after. So you land, and you come out, and there's most likely just bodies everywhere.
Death all around you.
I mean, just unimaginable.
Yeah. My grandfather, you know, he was one of the toughest men I ever knew. But, you know, when I was a kid growing up, he was the janitor at our grade school, you know, and he was very quiet, just went about his work, did his job, was a really hard worker. And a lot of the things I learned about him, I learned, unfortunately, after he died.
Right.
You know, and then it's like I'm reading all these stories and I'm seeing how heroic these guys were. But, man, what a generation. And we should all thank them. We shouldn't put out petitions to not honor their memory on Memorial Day. We should thank them every day, because we could easily have been speaking Japanese and or German.
Yeah. Who knows, man? Who knows?
Yeah. Let's get to the news of the day. Before we get into the topic of the day, which is this what you voted for, part two?
We didn't get enough the first time.
We're going to review and maybe give a report card to the current president. The former president still continues to make news. Over the weekend, Facebook said that they're going to continue the ban of Donald Trump until January of 2023. What do you think about that?
I mean, it's obviously not a surprise, you know. I mean, who does anyone really take Facebook seriously anymore? I mean, I've told you off air, you know, we have our Facebook page, and we love our Facebook page, and
so we take it seriously.
We're very active on the Facebook page, but you know, I mean, we have to. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it got taken down. You know, I mean, I think we should have other contingency plans for reaching out to people, because it's just the amount of misinformation and controlling the narrative that's happening on all of these social media platforms is ridiculous. And I don't think they're clearly not hiding the ball anymore. So
the vice president of global affairs for Facebook, a guy named Nick Clegg, said over the weekend that they try to be fair and transparent about their decisions. Clegg says Trump was removed from Facebook because of his encouragement of violence around the Capitol attacks on June 6th, and he hopes people think the consequence of that action is reasonable. Well, here's the deal on that. Trump was impeached over it and was not convicted in the United States Senate. We talked about that early on in this podcast, that if you really think Donald Trump incited violence, and we've seen like the speech put side by side with what happened that day, if you really think he did it, there are other venues to get that done. As far as I know, there was no indictment of Donald Trump on incitement to riot. Was
right.
there?
No.
Okay.
No. And I mean, the case, again, we've covered this before, but the case that he incited, you know, a violent insurrection at the Capitol is ridiculous. There's no evidence of that. And if the standard for incitement of an insurrection is that he questioned the election, and then other people who also questioned the election went out and committed, you know, violent acts or what have you, then I'm sorry, but there's a lot of people that are going to have to pay the piper that are not Donald Trump. So are we having objective standards, or is it just Orange Man bad and he can't be on Facebook because we don't like him? I mean, it's obvious that that's what's happening. It's obvious that's what's happening when they're leaving people up who have, you know, violent, racist, anti-white rhetoric connected to BLM protests that have been happening for over a year now. You know, it's so obvious, and it's just like, you know, I don't know what to make of it, because everyone still uses Facebook and Twitter. You know, I'm not really on Twitter, but what do we do? What's the move going forward? Because it's not really sustainable. You know, I mean, I think obviously Congress has a role. They should probably do something about it, but I don't know if they're going to. So,
well, and then we get to the question, will Donald Trump run again in 2024? He's making speeches. He's making noise about it. Over the weekend, he talked about whether or not Mike Pence would be a running mate. And I don't think that would ever happen again in a million years, because Pence has been in New Hampshire basically putting daylight between himself and Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to run. I don't think he's the right guy. I don't think he's the right messenger moving
Pence?
Forward. Yeah.
Why? I'm curious. Why do you say that?
I don't know. I mean, there are intangibles that go with presidential politics. I think Joe Biden is an outlier. I don't think Joe Biden could have ever been elected president. He tried like, what, 15, 16 times, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, the election was about Donald Trump.
Anti-Donald Trump.
Yeah.
As Joe Biden said very famously, we could run Mickey Mouse mm-hmm. and beat this president.
Mm-hmm.
And we may well have Mickey Mouse in there now. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
It may tie too closely to the Trump administration. I don't know. You just look at a guy and you say, yeah, that guy could be president, or that gal could be president. I just don't look at Mike Pence and say, that guy could be president. He could do the job. There's no question.
I think you make a great point, which is something that we've talked about and where I've sort of defended Donald Trump a little bit more than you have. You know, like Mike Pence, I think he has a lot of the right ideas. I mean, certainly on specific issues like abortion, you know, he's been incredibly pro-life. I think he's been a huge advocate for the pro-life cause, which is amazing. But he doesn't have that stuff. He doesn't have
charisma.
He doesn't have like the sprinkles. He doesn't have the special sauce that gives
right.
him the command to be the president and to really command a movement, you know. And I think that is what called people to Donald Trump, is he does have that charisma. He does have the energy and the passion and the way of speaking that makes people feel like they can relate, you know, or that draws people in.
I'm looking for a transformative figure, and I don't look at Mike Pence and say, you're a transformative figure. And I think
right.
we really need one. We're screaming for one right now. And the guy that we got there now, again, he's only there because people suburban women in large measure decided they didn't want to see mean tweets anymore. So Donald Trump's not being mean to you on Twitter anymore. But, right. You know, did you really vote for all of this? And we're going to get into all of this coming up here in just a second. And I question that. But meanwhile, Trump is still out there. He doubled down over the weekend calling the COVID-19 the Chinese virus. What's wrong with that?
No, and actually, there, I'm going to drop a clip here of my favorite Donald Trump moment, I think, in his entire presidency. If you haven't seen this clip, you should watch it because it's hilarious.
Why do you keep calling this the Chinese virus? There are reports of dozens of incidents of bias against Chinese Americans in this country. Your own aide, Secretary Azar, says he does not use this term. He says ethnicity does not cause the virus. Why do you keep using this?
A lot of people comes say from it's China. Racist. It's not racist at all, no, not at all. It comes from China. That's why. It comes from China.
And
I want to be accurate.
About Chinese Americans,
yeah, please,
in
John.
Country,
please.
AIDS behind you. Are you comfortable
I have great love for all of the people from our country. But as you know, China tried to say at one point, maybe they stopped now, that it was caused by American soldiers. That can't happen. It's not going to happen. Not as long as I'm president. It comes from China.
Well, I mean, you know, when we had the Spanish flu, we called it the Spanish flu.
Yep.
There weren't people running up and down the streets going, that's racist against Spain. Chinese virus is fine with me because that's where it came from. And Donald Trump was saying over the weekend that we really need to go after China and punish China.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to punish Russia for all of the things that Russia's been up to lately. And yet, if you listen to the mainstream media, they'll tell you that Trump was in bed with the Chinese and in bed with the Russians.
Silly. Silly. I had a pretty close friend block me on Facebook and block my phone number and everything because I called it the Chinese virus. If you can believe it.
It's what it is.
It's literally what it is.
It came
and
from
now,
China.
And now more than ever, we should be calling it the Chinese virus because not only did it come from China, but it very likely was created by China in a lab. So we should absolutely be calling it that. We should absolutely be drawing attention to the fact that, you know, China needs to be held responsible for what they did with this Wuhan virology lab. And the American, you know, public health establishment needs to be held accountable too, including Dr. Fauci, who had direct involvement in funding this lab. You know, it's like it's reaching clown world levels of ridiculousness. And, you know, nobody seems to be interested in figuring it out. You know, they're not interested in figuring out whether the virus came from the Wuhan lab or if Dr. Fauci and others funded it, but they're interested in creating a 9/11 style commission on the January 6th riot.
Right, exactly. Jonathan Carl at ABC News, who was quite the foil in the press briefing room when Trump was president, he said over the weekend that, you know, maybe there was some truth to all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And just because Donald Trump said it, we shouldn't discount it necessarily. But then he would go on to say, he said all kinds of other crazy things that discounted it on its face. But, you know, some of the things he said were actually true.
Well,
shocking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I've said this to a couple of my liberal friends. You know, I think really the Biden administration so far has pretty much been, well, yeah, I guess Trump was right about that. You know, I mean, that say what you want, but I mean, he was mostly right about the Chinese virus, COVID-19. He was right about immigration. He was right about the economy. He was right about Israel. He was right about, you know, all these things. He was right about Russia and China. And so, like, now we see Biden going back just because Orange Man bad. He's going back on all these things and changing them. And, you know, you said we need a transformational figure. Joe Biden is also a transformational figure, just in the wrong direction, you know, which we're going to talk about in more detail here.
Well,
in
not
minute,
yet. But I mean, there's still time and there's still hope. And there, believe it or not, are some Democrats out there that are holding the line and keeping him from doing everything that he wants to do. But as Barack Obama famously said, elections have consequences. And this one has some consequences that we need to correct quickly. And that's coming up because if they don't get anything done this year, Kurt, they're not going to do anything next year. Next year is an election year. It's the midterm. So if you don't get it done in the first year, it's not going to happen. And then the midterm, typically and overwhelmingly when Democrats have had the White House, go back to Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, their first midterm, they lost in record numbers in the House and the Senate. It was America's way of saying, that's a bridge too far. You know, when Bill Clinton held up that card and he said, everybody's going to get one of these health cards because we're taking over the healthcare system. America didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
And then Barack Obama passed Obamacare with no Republican support. And the American middle and right came to the polls and said, we don't want to do that.
Right. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting, you know, that there's the backlash in the midterms, but it doesn't seem to really last. Like, people don't have the attention span in politics. Most people, you know, they don't seem to really have the attention span of like a dedicated ideology or preferred policy goals. It's like, oh, well, these people are going too far. We're going to vote against them. But then you look 2 years after that, and then it goes away. It's not the case anymore. There's not this big red wave. You know, I mean, Trump barely won in 2016, and we barely held on to the Congress. And then after that, you know, the Democrats took the Congress. And then after that, Joe Biden won the presidency, you know. So
are you trying to cheer me up?
No, sorry. Yeah, I mean, I guess I just wish that people, you know, had more longevity in terms of their beliefs.
Well, the country is, and we talked about this in the first podcast episode. You can go all the way back to episode one and talked about this, that the country is slowly becoming more progressive. It is.
No doubt.
It's a slow drumbeat toward progressivism. And when it gets too far, that's when the electorate comes in and yanks it back. And we're at one of those moments where it's like, if Joe Biden got to do everything he wants to do on his agenda, a majority of this country, a solid majority, would say, whoa, that's way too far.
Right. But what I'm saying is, again, not to depress you, but that happened in 2010 and 2012 with Barack Obama, where they were going too far, or, you know, perceived to be going too far with taxes and healthcare and things like that. And then we had the Tea Party movement, and then the Republicans won big in Congress. But I mean, look at that compared to now. Both the Democrat and the Republican parties are far, far more liberal today than they were in 2012. So I mean, it's a short-term stopgap, but in terms of the long-term trend of, you know, our country and our politics moving to the left and the entire Overton window being shifted to the left, even within the Republican Party, that has not stopped. And in fact, in many ways, it's even accelerated. Even with people coming out in the midterms and voting for Republicans and things like that, it doesn't really stop the broader trend of what's happening in society, I don't think.
Well, if I'm right, and I hope I'm right, this election's going to boil down to the hangover from getting rid of Orange Man Bad, right? Bad man who writes mean things on Twitter, and then the country wakes up and says, whoa, we didn't really vote for this, and you're going to see record numbers, and maybe it's a snapback moment that gets us back to a little bit more conservatism, more constructionism in terms of the Constitution and all that. And, you know, my liberal friends and my progressive friends, they don't like the term liberal anymore.
Right.
Liberal's become a bad word.
I've come across that as well.
My progressive friends will tell me, Joe Biden hasn't really done anything yet. And that's true. Mm-hmm. He's not done a lot. I mean, he's done some things through executive order that we don't like. Donald Trump did things through executive order that I know liberals don't like. But in terms of actual legislation, he hasn't really done a whole lot yet. And there are people who are sort of the heroes in the Democratic Party, as far as I'm concerned. And the biggest hero right now is Joe Manchin. He is, I mean, they're making voodoo dolls of him on the left. Mm-hmm. Stick pin here. Because the two things that he has done most recently, he's rejected the election bill. Mm-hmm. So that thing is dead on arrival. There will not be federalizing of election laws. They will still, and I thought that was unconstitutional anyway.
Right.
Would probably have been tested in the courts. But those are still going to be the purview of the states. The state secretary of state is going to set the rules. The legislature is going to be involved in setting the rules. So you can thank Joe Manchin for that, because if he had gone the other way with Kamala Harris, that would have been a done deal.
Indeed.
And he's also now ended any talk of the Senate getting rid of the filibuster rule.
Mm-hmm.
So now the legislative filibuster rule is still in effect. So to get things done, and I've always loved this about the Senate, you need the other side. I mean, you have to have 60 votes to get anything done. And that, unless we really got to a point where there would be 65 Republicans, say, that would be kind of a good thing, wouldn't it?
If they were good Republicans.
So without that, you're going to have some folks from the other side because the math doesn't work any other way. Mm-hmm. And that gets compromise going. And that's why the Senate and the House work well together. Again, we get back to the founders and the Constitution and how brilliant that document is.
Yeah. And it's not just about compromise. It's also about gridlock. I mean, I tell people this all the time, too. They're like, well, why can't Congress get anything done? Why can't our government get anything done? It's like, you don't understand. It's not supposed to get stuff
right.
done. It is by
design. What do you
design.
Want to get done?
Yeah, I mean, it's by design that it's so hard to pass bills and you know, get them passed by both houses. You know, it starts in one, it goes to the other, it goes back to the first. They're constantly going back and forth, tweaking things, you know, reaching an agreement, and then they have to have two-thirds sign. And then ideally, you know, if we're talking about real, like, weighted actions from Congress, it should be, in many cases, you know, an amendment to the Constitution like
right.
we've had. That has to be ratified by the states. It has to be signed by the president. It has to be upheld by the courts. There's all these steps. That's on purpose because we don't want a government that just has the power to, you know, put in whatever they want, which is kind of what we have now in a lot of ways. When you think about it, when you think about all the power that's been shifted from Congress to the executive branch through the departments and agencies
right. we
in Washington, D.C., sure. which we have talked about before. And, you know, now Biden, again, I mean, he's coming out and saying stuff about this new budget that he wants. He's proposed like $6 trillion in spending or,
right.
you know, $8 quintillion, kajillion dollars or whatever it is. And he's already come out and said, you know, oh, well, if we don't get what we want, because the Republicans came back and they proposed still way too much spending, but
right.
slightly less than he wanted.
Right.
And he's like, no, that's not good enough. You know, if we can't get it our way, then we're going to have to figure out another way to do it. We're going to do it through budget reconciliation or with my pen and my phone and all these other things. So they already know going in to the negotiation. They already know the Republicans are going to say no. They're going to come back with this thing. They're going to say no. They're going to come back with this thing. In an ideal world, in an actual constitutional government, that would be the end of it and nothing would get done.
Right.
But instead, you know, we have all of these other avenues, quote unquote, that are being created and exploited by the federal government to get things done anyways, which is, you know, it's not constitutional. And like I said, gridlock is on purpose. So we should celebrate that.
And if we can get to gridlock, if we can get to the end of this year without them doing anything, they won't do anything next year. So
yeah.
that's going to be great too.
Perfect.
And meanwhile, the economy should improve on its own. But we'll get to that because you just hit the first thing I want to talk about. Is this what you voted for? Part two. And item number one is the $6 trillion budget.
Mm-hmm.
$6 trillion in a country that is over $27 trillion in debt.
At least. I mean, if not more at this
snowballing
point.
Snowballing every day. It's going to be $30 trillion before you know it. And does anybody care? When does that number become a problem?
No, I don't think anyone cares. And to be honest, I don't think the Republicans care either. I think the only reason that they're, you know, coming back with a smaller, slightly smaller budget to Joe Biden's $6 trillion budget is because they just want to appear as an opposition. You know, they want to like come back and say, oh, we're pushing back against Joe Biden, when really they're not. I mean, this was true under the Donald Trump administration too, with the Republicans in power at the beginning of his administration. They didn't seem to care about spending either, and they had increased spending in many ways over the Obama administration. So
well,
that's a bipartisan
yeah,
problem for sure.
It's an inflection point, and it's time to go in a different direction. But, you know, Joe Biden's an old political hack. I mean, he's been running around Washington, D.C. for a half century, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's back, and he's in the White House now, and he's got his favorite two go-tos here, class and race.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it's about. Class and race, the tax increases that's going to pay for all of this stuff that he wants to do, just for the rich.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you make $400,000 a year, you're never going to pay an extra tax.
Right.
And I think people are finally, and maybe we're helping along on this road, they're finally seeing through that. They're seeing through that veil and saying, gosh, if you raise taxes on corporations, they're probably going to raise prices. I'm going to pay a tax that way. They're probably going to cut employees, so I'm going to pay that way.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of different ways other than direct taxes that people are affected by higher taxes.
Yeah, and as I've mentioned before, taxes are no longer about paying for the spending of the federal government. Taxes are about class warfare, sticking it to the rich, screw the rich, eat the rich, whatever you want to say. And It's pure redistribution, and that's all this is about. If anyone out there listening or anyone that you talk to seriously thinks that taxing people over $400,000 income is going to pay for a $6 trillion federal budget, you are kidding yourselves. You're kidding yourself. It's not even close. You could take 100% of all of their money and you wouldn't scratch the surface. But when you notice when they talk about it, that's not what they're talking about. Joe Biden, the Democrats in Congress, they're not talking about, oh, we need to raise this tax on people above $400,000 income because we need to pay for this budget.
Right.
That's not what they say. No. What they say is the rich aren't paying their fair share.
Make it fair. And that gets to class warfare and race warfare. I mean, that's he said over the weekend that the biggest problem that we have in the United States, biggest problem, systemic racism.
Well, he said specifically white supremacy is what he said.
Yeah.
As I said in my address to the joint session of Congress, according to the intelligence community, terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland today. Not ISIS, not Al-Qaeda, white supremacists.
And which is just a joke.
Does anybody believe that?
I think people do, sadly. Yeah.
On the far left, they probably do. I don't know. I mean, we work in a racially diverse building, in a racially diverse culture in Kansas City, and I don't see it. Dealing with people day to day,
well,
I just
it's
don't
also
see it.
Just not supported by objective facts and reason, you know, and it's totally an emotional play. It's totally baseless, and it's a joke. And, you know, there was some people in the FBI or something like that that came out a few months ago and said that white supremacy... white supremacist terrorism is the biggest domestic threat. And that's a joke, too. And it's like, okay, yeah, we already know we can't trust the NIH. We can't trust Dr. Fauci. We can't trust all of these federal officials. You know, why should we trust some guy in the FBI if he comes out and says something that's blatantly untrue? And, you know, people have come up to me and said, didn't you see what the FBI said? It's like, yeah, I did see what the FBI said. It's a freaking joke. It's not true.
Well, you know why they use class and race? Because it works.
Yeah,
they
it
get
works
elected
to divide people. Yeah,
time over time over time. And if we ever get, I've said this many times, but if we ever get to a point where race is not the issue in this country, people like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton are going to have to go get a job. And they're going to have to get a real job. And class warfare is another one. You know, Democrats are going to have to go get a job somewhere. And then, you know, they'll be in the economy as well, which is, this is another issue, being dragged down by people who won't work because of free money from Washington. That is a major problem in this country.
Yeah.
I went to Tim's Pizza over the weekend in Independence because we had family over and they like Tim's Pizza. And I noticed it said carry out only. They've got two big dining rooms at Tim's Pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, I said, is this still COVID related? And they said, we can't get anybody to work.
Mm.
And I'm hearing that over and over and over again.
Yeah.
We can't get people to work. We're having a big job fair at Cable Dahmer Arena on June 16th. Going to be a lot of employers there. I told one of my sons over the weekend, I said, if you ever wanted to upgrade your work situation, this is the time to do it.
Right.
Because the opportunities are out there. And companies are competing to get workers back. They're competing, unfortunately, with the federal government. And to your point, it's like the big swamp. It's like they take all this tax revenue mm-hmm. that doesn't fund the government.
Right.
It gets shot back out to people through class and race mm-hmm. who are people who are disadvantaged. That's a word they would probably use. And then those people won't work, and it drags down the economy.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to compete with doing nothing. You know, for a job. I mean, that's kind of the best job out there, right? Is sitting on
your ass.
Wouldn't
you get bored sitting on your ass playing video games over and over and over again?
And again, I mean, it's becoming part of the culture. You know, I have friends that, you know, without giving away too much personal information, but, you know, that are on government assistance and things like that, and they seem to brag about it. They don't really seem too concerned. So, I mean, it's, again, you know, going back to shame being proper function in society, you know, you should be unhappy. You know, it's not, when I was just coming out of high school, I was on unemployment for like 3 months or something like that. And I understood because I was taught by my parents that that's not sustainable. You know, this is something that, you have as a short-term thing. You know, you're looking for a job, you're going to get a job, you have to get a job, you have to return to the workforce. You know what
I mean? Right. Well, and before anybody's head explodes on the left, who are probably just dying to write a reply to what you just said, you do pay for unemployment. I mean, when you get paid, that's part of your what's taken out of your check is unemployment insurance. So if you've got a short-term unemployment situation, you've already paid for that. You should get that. What I'm talking about is this free money that's coming out of Washington, D.C., this COVID relief thing when, you know, there's no accountability for it. There is in Florida. DeSantis in Florida, he's making them start to prove that they're actually out looking for a job.
Right.
It's just free money coming out of D.C., and that's what's having a negative effect on the economy, not short-term unemployment.
Right. I'm talking about substituting a job for government assistance.
Yeah.
You know, and that goes beyond unemployment. I mean, it's welfare generally, you know, it's everything, and it destroys families, it destroys neighborhoods, and it destroys, it's degrading our culture and our society. And if people think that they can, you know, just sit on their butts and get paid and not have to work or not have to do anything, I mean, that's the problem. It's not that, you know, people need help and they're getting the help or whatever. I mean, like, you know, with the whole COVID thing, you know, people were getting stimulus checks and all that, and that's a whole different conversation. I don't think, you know, I have feelings about that too, but I don't think that that's the same thing. It's a separate issue.
Is this what you voted for? Part two is what we're talking about. Joe Biden, the president of the United States, when he was running for president with all those Democrats in the primaries, he basically said at debates, when he's president, southern border is going to be open. Come on in. We want as many of you as you can get through the border. And now, of course, he's changed his tune a little bit. And that situation is not getting any better from any time we've talked about it before.
No. And it's another example of, oh, well, I guess Trump is right about that. You know, like I said, that's the theme of Biden administration.
And, you know,
so
they talk about Trump's 22,000, 23,000 lies. I mean, you know, that's a definite liberal talking point. Mm-hmm. 23,000 lies. Mm-hmm. I tell them, name five. Mm-hmm. What did he lie about?
Right.
And they always go to, well, he said you should drink bleach. Never said it.
Nope.
Next, give me two more lies that he said. Meanwhile, the Biden administration is lying their ass off.
Right.
You know, they kept the media out of what was happening on the southern border. Then they moved a bunch of those people, brought the media into an empty building and said, see, we solved the problem. No, you didn't. You just moved them somewhere else.
Yep. Yeah, it's like, you know, people saying that Trump is a racist. It's like, okay, what did he do or say that's racist? Like, give me an example. Well, he said that Nazis are very fine people. Nope, wrong. Next. He said that Mexicans are rapists. Nope, wrong. Next. You know, like just down the list. So,
I mean,
and you know, with the quote unquote fact checkers like the Washington Post and PolitiFact and all that kind of stuff, they have a very leftist lens. So even those, you know, however many thousand or whatever lies that they say, it's you have to take it all with a grain of salt.
Yep. Gas prices continue to skyrocket. And the first act that he made as president was canceling the Keystone XL pipeline. People will say on the left that it wasn't his fault that the Russians hacked in and screwed up the Colonial Pipeline, which had an effect. But again, what he can't get away from is his stated goal to take us off fossil fuels as soon as possible and rely on wind and solar.
Mm-hmm.
Can't get away from that.
Right.
So there is no incentive for companies to reinvest in plants that use fossil fuels. They say that we're going to go to electric cars. Some of this feels like a repeat. But again, this is a review of, is this what you voted for? And it's part two. We're just reminding you of what's actually happening out there so that you'll take it a little more seriously as we go into the midterm election. Inflation, that's starting to happen as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, where's the good news? I mean, objectively, what's he done that you could put in the good news category? Major increases in violent crime in big cities across this country. He's done absolutely nothing on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only good news, which, you know, his press team over the weekend and a little bit last week, they were trying to put out news about the jobs reports, and it's a very obvious sleight of hand and taking credit for something that, you know, he shouldn't be taking credit for. But obviously the economy is starting to open back up and thing jobs are coming back and people are hiring and all of that. And so they put out numbers that, you know, Biden has the best jobs numbers of any president in the first 4 months or whatever it's been.
Right, I heard that and I rolled my eyes to the back of my head because, you know,
obviously not
how many have come out of a pandemic?
Yeah, obviously not due to Joe Biden, but I would say, you know, that's really the main good news that's just happening in general right now is that we're coming out of the pandemic, but I don't think that Biden really has any responsibility for that. So as far as Biden specific good news, I couldn't really tell you anything.
Well, I would respect the hell out of him if he walked out to the briefing room and he said, look,
I quit.
Short of that, which I don't think is happening. And I don't know that I would like that because Kamala Harris would be there to pick up the ball.
That's true.
So maybe you want to rethink that. But if he went out there into the briefing room and he said, you know what, the pandemic is behind us now. We're shutting off the tap from D.C. The best thing you can do for this country is to get off your ass and go get a job.
That's not going to happen.
I know it's not going to happen, but I'd respect the hell out of him if it did happen. What he's taking credit for is the vaccine rollout, which was Donald Trump.
Right.
You know, how many Democrats said, I'm not putting this in my arm if it comes from Trump?
Right. How many times did the fact checkers, quote unquote, you know, when Trump was saying that there would be a vaccine by the end of the year, called him crazy and said that he was lying?
Well, that was a lie. So that's in the 23,000, yet you know, he was ahead of schedule. So maybe it was a lie in a good way because he said maybe 18 months and it happened by the end of the first year.
Right.
So, So he's taking credit for the vaccine rollout, and that is progressing. And I know there are some certain people out there, which I find interesting. You know, one thing I'll agree with Biden on, the vaccine is not political. I mean, it started with Trump, and now Biden's got it. How can it be political? Well, I know. Go ahead. You tell me where I'm wrong.
They make everything political, Dale. I mean, you know this. The masks are political. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
So the vaccine is definitely political.
Okay, but
it's a political statement they're making. They're overtly making political statements about the vaccine. It is your civic duty to get the vaccine. It's your responsibility as an American citizen to get the vaccine.
Didn't Trump say the same thing?
You have them pressuring people to basically discriminate based on whether you've gotten the vaccine or not, in terms of allowing you into their business, in terms of whether you have to wear a mask or not, in terms of separating people, whether they've gotten the vaccine or not. And I think, you know, it's like the mask. I mean, the mask, you've had people, very prominent people, you know, celebrities and things like that, that have gone on social media and other places and said, well, I know I don't have to wear the mask anymore, but I'm still wearing it because I don't want people thinking I'm a Republican.
Oh, my God. You know, the eye roll reflex that I have, I mean, I'm really going to hurt my eyes at some point. I'm going to have to go see an eye doctor.
Need surgery,
But back to my point I just made. I mean, didn't Trump say the same thing? Didn't he say, you know, we're coming with these vaccines, Operation Warp Speed? He took the vaccine.
I think the difference is Trump did not speak to Americans about their civic duty to get the vaccine. Trump's whole thing was, we're going to get the vaccine as quickly as possible. I think his whole, I mean, at least as far as I can see, his thing was, you know, get it if you want. If you want it, it's going to be available by the end of the year as soon as possible. Operation Warp Speed, we're working with all of these pharmaceutical companies to get the vaccine developed. But he was never talking about, you have to get the vaccine. If you don't get the vaccine, like, okay, Biden coming out and saying,
if you've been fully vaccinated, you no longer need to wear a mask. Let me repeat. If you are fully vaccinated, you no longer need to wear a mask. But if you've not been vaccinated, or if you're getting a two-shot routine vaccine, and you've not gotten you only had your first shot, but not your second, or you haven't waited the full 2 weeks after your second shot, you still need to wear a mask. Get the shot. Anyone 12 years or above in age is eligible. And for now, after a year of hard work and so much sacrifice, the rule is very simple. Get vaccinated or wear a mask until you do.
That is a political statement about the vaccine and about the mask. He's showing his support that you must do this or do this. Trump never said anything like that.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the solution for that, and we've talked about this before, You talk about businesses that say you can't come in. In fact, you had one of the funniest memes we've had so far since doing the podcast. You went into a Westport business and they gave you a paper towel to hold over your mouth.
That's correct.
That was funny as hell.
Yeah.
But it really happened to you. But the solution to that is to vote with your feet and vote with your wallet.
Right.
Okay. Don't go into that place.
Yep.
And, you know, if enough people do that, that business is going to go, wonder about it. It relates the same way with the smoking ordinances that we used to have.
Well, what's really going to happen, though, is that because it's political, the business is going to become politically divided. It just means that, you know, like that business that handed me the paper towel, I'm not going there anymore.
Right.
But people who are very pro-mask will still go there because they make them wear a mask. That is now a political statement. There is a political divide. We have left-right. We have conservative, liberal. We have Democrat, Republican. We have mask, no mask.
My gut feeling.
And I'm not saying that I want that.
Right.
I'm just saying that that's just what's happening.
So I'm maybe more of an optimist, more of a glass half full kind of a guy. And I just think that as time goes on, there's going to be less and less of that. There's still going to be the Karens of the world that are going to wear their mask and look down on you because you didn't or you don't. But like the policy here at the radio station, for instance, I'll bring that up. The policy now is if you've had both of the vaccines or the J&J vaccine and you've had your second one, if it's Moderna or the other one, after the 2 weeks, you can go mask free. And if you choose not to, you got to wear a mask. My question is how long? Like 10 years? I mean, what's the rule?
It's a good question.
It's a great question. All right. So are we done beating up on Biden? Is this what you voted for, part two? I'm just trying to fire people
at
up.
At least he's not making mean tweets, though. That's the most important thing.
Exactly. He's not mean tweeting. He's not a mean person. He's not a bad man. But he is dividing this country on class and race lines in the typical way that Democrats have done probably since FDR. And if you like that and you want that, that's what you got, and that's what you should continue to vote for. Hopefully, I'm very hopeful. Again, I'm optimistic that in 2022, and again, all we got to do is get to the end of this year. We get to the end of this year, nothing will happen.
Maybe, yeah, we'll see.
Gridlock, it's a good thing.
Yeah, but again, I mean, we have gridlock only in the traditional constitutional sense, which is not really how we're being governed anymore. I mean, we're more often than not, we're being governed through the federal departments and agencies. And then we also just have our culture, which is shifting in a not good direction. So everything is downstream of that. You know, Andrew Breitbart famously said politics are downstream of culture. So I think that's the main thing that we should be worried about. You know, obviously we need to talk about the $6 trillion budget. We need to talk about COVID relief. We need to talk about unemployment. We need to talk about all these things. And hopefully there is gridlock on all of that. But I don't think that we should pretend that just because no $6 trillion budget gets passed that we're like avoiding, you know, consequence.
Just trying to put a Band-Aid on it until we can get it fixed.
Yeah.
With a different president and a different Congress. And it's going to start with a different Congress. I'm going to leave you with this because, as you may have heard, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle don't want to be bothered by the media. They want their privacy, right?
Uh-huh.
I thought this was so funny. Over the weekend, I saw the news story through their spokesperson. Now, if you don't want to be bothered by the media, why do you have a spokesperson?
Right.
Yeah. So they've had a baby girl. Lilibet Diana Mountbatten Windsor was born. So Lilibet is the nickname of Queen Elizabeth. That's what her friends call her. And Diana, obviously, was Harry's mom. So they don't want anything to do with the royal family, but they named their kid after the queen and his mom.
Right. And they don't want people bothering them, yet they keep going on Oprah and every other talk show and, you know, pretending like Americans should give a shit about the royal family.
Okay.
That's how I feel about it.
I just wanted to float that out there like the turd that it is and see if, you know, anything would come of it.
Nope.
And apparently not. That's going to do it for us. We'll see you next week. This is Dale Carter's America.
The views expressed on Dale Carter's America are Dale's and Kurt Wheeler's. They do not necessarily reflect the views of KFKF or Steel City Media. Comments can be sent to DaleC@KFKF.com. Thanks for listening. Check back every week for new episodes.